Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Too much information driving you insane? Well, go local. Use moderation. Avoid overly processed choices. These could be catchphrases about what to eat. They're also part of Clay Johnson's arguments in his new book, The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. The co-founder of Blue State Digital, which helped on the Obama campaign in 2008, and the former director of Sunlight Labs at the Sunlight Foundation, joins us to talk about our information consumption habits and ideas to reform them. Clay, welcome to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian.
And I should describe for our listeners that the cover of your book looks like a packaged food label. But instead of things like calories and saturated fat in the listing, it's the contents of your book by things like the percentage of recommended daily anecdotes, commentary, and scientific research in our media consumption. So that's your starting point. Describe the connection between information technology and the food industry and why you chose this as your design and your metaphor.
Well, the idea here is that we as information consumers can learn a lot from our history with the consumption of food. And in fact, our food industry and our media industry have a heck of a lot in common. For instance, in the 20th century, we saw our food providers consolidate into a few large multinational publicly traded corporations with fiduciary responsibility to shareholders. And the same thing has really happened to media. With food, we saw those multinational corporations work hard to squeeze the nutrients out of food and make food as cheaply as possible. And the result is, I think, an obese nation. Obesity rates soaring over 25% in many states. And I think the same thing is happening in media, where we see an organization like Fox News decide to hire opinion journalists rather than to build up a newsroom in order to compete with CNN, and Fox News becoming, and now MSNBC doing the same thing. Those organizations actually becoming more profitable than and more viewed than CNN. Or organizations that have large newsrooms, and so there's just a lot to learn between from food that we can apply to our information consumption habits. And so my book is called The Information Diet, and it talks about how we have to start looking at our information consumption through the lens of both personal and public health.
Listeners, you want to talk about your – I'm particularly interested in hearing from listeners about their social media consumption and how you think that's affecting how informed you are. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Clay Johnson, author of The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. Is this an ideological book? I want to get this out of the way, because you founded Blue State Digital, the firm that built Obama's online campaign, so you have partisan ties. Are you trying to get people to use the media for specific aims?
I'm trying to get people to start using their local media more and their national media less. I'm not convinced that, well, to get it out of the way, to answer your question more directly, no, I don't think it's a partisan book. I myself have a liberal bias. I put that on the cover of the book. It's one of the segments of the nutritional label. However, I think I'm equally as
10%. By the way, I'll add that you have a you list your ideological bias as. Does that mean 10% of the daily recommended ideological bias that people should consume in the media?
No. The cover of the book, actually, the labels of the book apply to the contents of the book. If you think about a nutritional label doesn't describe to you a diet. A nutritional label describes what's the contents of the thing that you're about to eat.
Right.
And so that's what the cover is. And so I think that the book is biased about 10% based on my own professional political bias. But
that's very transparent.
I think overall I'm pretty even-handed with both Fox News, MSNBC, Drudge, and the Huffington Post.
Do you think liberals and conservatives use media in different ways?
I think the problem is that we're using it roughly in the same way. The premise of the book is, who wants to hear the truth when they can hear that they're right? I certainly don't want to hear the truth. If I can be affirmed, I'd much rather be affirmed than be informed. And that's a big problem that we have with our media consumption right now, is that we have media companies set up to tell us either to be afraid or to tell us that we're right, because that's what sells. So I'm trying to prescribe a different kind of diet that's not particularly partisan, that says, let's go closer to the source materials of information. Let's call on journalists to show their work, to show us where the information is that they're using to formulate their stories. And let's make it so that we can, open up the vaults of government and make it so that we can make our own decisions. A lot of this comes more from my experience at the Sunlight Foundation than it does from my experience at Blue State Digital. The problem I had with the Sunlight Foundation and the work of transparency is, who wants to eat broccoli when they can eat French fries?
Right. And a lot of the problem, even if we're trying to consume consciously in terms of nutritious news media, is that a lot of the political media we consume, we run into inadvertently. You might be watching Meet the Press as your choice, and during the commercial break, a flood of negative ads paid for by somebody's super PACs come on, one party's or the other's. It's like being force-fed carbs that you don't want on your way into the health food store, to take your analogy. How does that fit into your case for conscious consumption?
Well, what I say is generally turn it off. And to flip your information diet around, start local. Be more concerned with your spouse than you are Barack Obama. Be more concerned with your neighborhood than you are your member of Congress. And be more concerned with your state rep than you are your president. It's always puzzled me that the ballot box for president is more full than the ballot box for state representative, when your state rep or your city council person has far more of an effect on your daily life than your national government.
On the other hand, things like whether we're going to have universal health insurance in this country or whether we're going to go to another war, these are too huge, and they do affect people.
Certainly, but keep in mind that Mitt Romney passed universal health insurance for Massachusetts long before Barack Obama did for the country, and he did so at a local level, right?
Mm-hmm. Where does social media fit in your opinion?
Well, a lot of people look at my book, look at the book's cover and say, oh, it's the information diet. This is going to tell me not to use Facebook and Twitter. But the subtitle of the book is, this is a case for conscious consumption, which really means we have to start looking at our information consumption deliberately and healthily. So Facebook and Twitter, these things are neither good nor bad for you. It's really your habits that that are determining whether or not they're good or bad. So, for instance, my wife and I are having our first kid in a few months, and a lot of my friends found out that it's a boy via Facebook and Twitter. I think that's healthy information. I think that's healthy, high-quality information that a lot of people learned. But a lot of junk also flies through social media. The real question is, can we consume deliberately? Can we sort our social networks such that we're getting the best information out of it, getting the information about the ones that we love and the ones that we care about out of it, and not succumbing to the cacophony of distraction that also exists inside?
Clay Johnson, my guest on WNYC, his new book, The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. How are you reacting to this, folks, and how do you try to do something like this in your own life, in your own social media consumption, too? How many dozens, how many hundreds of tweets are you reading every day now? How many Facebook posts? 212-433-WNYC. And how does it play into not just what you know about your family and looking at the latest photos of your cousin's kids or whatever it is, but how does this play into your role as a citizen? What do you think? And is it making you consume nutritious media, if you will, more or less? You could be consuming more because you're looking at really interesting links that are meaningful that people are passing around through the social web. Or maybe it means you're spending less time reading the front page of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal and more time with that, snarky little link that somebody sent you. So what about for you? How do you manage this information overload in today's social media world. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Steve in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Hey, great show. And Clay's appearance is very timely, I think, for a lot of us. I personally have been trying to consume more broccoli and less French fries, both nutritionally as well as media-wise. But I find that for me personally, I'm constantly trying to narrow down the sources, especially social media, that I investigate from day to day, and look for programs that combine all these things and help me distill down to the areas that I'm most interested in, because I think it it all goes back to education in a sense. What are teachers going to do in the future as far as shifting how they educate people in terms of using not only social media, mm-hmm. but to take into consideration that the famous quote, and I forget who said it at this point, I never learned anything from someone who agreed with me.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, Steve. Thank you for your call. And it's interesting that he brings education into it. Do you bring in education into it? I see you have a chapter called Data Literacy. I don't know if you get into how the schools teach us to start consuming, you know, in that kind of a direct fashion or not.
Well, I think that, you know, the chapter on in the information diet about data literacy is about how our definition of literacy is really changing. Our definition of literacy has always been fairly pliable. You know, literacy used to be a trade secret held by a relatively few small group of people called scribes, and now it's the ability to read a newspaper cover to cover. That's how we define literacy. But, you know, I think right now we have a bunch of people that say, I'm not a computer person. And those people are, I think, less economically viable than people who are a computer person. And so 20, 30 years from now, are those people going to be considered illiterate? I think it's likely that they'll be considered some kind of illiterate. And that's very interesting. The other part is I wanted to respond to that comment about never learning anything from someone I haven't disagreed with or argued with. I think there's something really key there. Our democracy is powered by two things, synthesis and pragmatism. And if we are only consuming what it is that we want to hear, we lose our ability to synthesize. So our information diets actually have an ethical social consequence to them, much like our food diets do. And so part of the information diet is really about how we, in order for democracy to survive, we have to change our personal information diets in order to lead the companies that are providing our information to make them chase consumers.
Christine in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I listen to you all the time. Actually, I wanted to say that as far as social media goes, I limit my Facebook page to only close friends and organizations that I support. So I know what the message is I'm going to be getting from them.
So this is almost, but let me challenge you for a second, because I think that's the opposite of what Clay was just saying. This idea that we don't really learn things. Well, what the last caller said, you know, I never learn as much as when I talk to people I disagree with. So why lock yourself in that echo chamber of only organizations you already support?
Well, mostly because I want to keep up with those issues such as Planned Parenthood or NARAL that I'm concerned with. And as far as close friends and family, I want to know what, you know, I've got you know, relatives serving overseas. I want to know what, you know, nieces and nephews, I want to know what they're doing. And close friends, I want to know what, you know, what's going on in their life. Like he was saying earlier that, you know, he put out that they were having what the gender of their baby was. But I also, I listened to WNYC because I think you guys tend to have pretty even track record on who you have on. I remember listening to David Frum. You have conservatives on as well as people who are more center-left or just out-and-out liberal. I watch CNN for political coverage because I think I like their lineup of David Gergen and, you know, liberal commentators. I know he's not a liberal. But I also watch Jon Stewart because I feel like he asks the questions that nobody else dares to ask.
Christine, thank you very much. So there's one woman's media diet, and it sounds like she is a conscious consumer, that she's going to things that she thinks a lot about, you know, before choosing them.
Yeah, it sounds like she's being very deliberate. I do think that you're right to ask that question about, you know, the sort of, are you creating an echo chamber for yourself? The reason I wrote the book, you know, I was working at the Sunlight Foundation and figured out I had to quit my job there because I saw a person holding a sign over their head that said, keep your government hands off my Medicare, which doesn't make any sense because obviously Medicare is a government-run program. And then the next day I saw a woman holding a sign over her head next to Walter Reed Army Hospital that said, enlist here to die for Halliburton. And I talked to these people, and these people weren't stupid. They weren't morons. They were college-educated people that were relatively bright. But the problem is that they had indoctrinated themselves into their own media diet that was only confirming their beliefs, and it was making them crazy. And so a little bit of diversity, I think, is really important in order to have a healthy balance for your information consumption.
One more. Lee in Scarsdale. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lee.
Hi there. And this is about social media. Let me rephrase it. Receiving things more frequently doesn't make it any better. Clay tweeted his son's gender. I have to tell you, his son's going to be around for 70 years. Sending a card out and having your friends find out in 2 weeks really doesn't make a difference. They don't need to get constant updates. If you're getting the news every day, why bother? Get The Economist. Read it every week. It's better, more synthesized, and more complete. Don't bother constantly checking on things. That's what's driving us crazy.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. One recommendation of the information diet, actually, is to limit the number of notifications that you get from these various services, to just cut down on them at all. Because the purpose of them, if you think about their intent is not really to inform you. Their intent is to keep you coming back to the website so that you view more advertisements. And so, you know, that little red box on Google now for Google Plus, or those red buttons up there on Facebook, or those text messages that you get saying that someone's mentioned you on Twitter or something like that, all that stuff has to go for a healthy information diet. And more importantly, pay attention to yesterday's news. Yesterday's news is far better than today's news because it stood the test of time. If people are still talking about it tomorrow, then you know it's probably worth your attention.
Before you go, do you see government as having any role to play in this conversation with respect to social media? We know historically that with respect to broadcasting, the reason that public broadcasting was created in the first place was as an alternative in the non-for-profit sector to, you know, the race to the bottom in terms of quality that that people in the 1960s, when this was created, saw around them. And then there have been things like the Fairness Doctrine, where the government tried to regulate certain kinds of equal time provisions, and most of that has fallen by the board. But that was for so-called old media. What about for social media? Do you see any role for government in this conversation, or is this just about raising people's consciousness at a, you know, at a private sector level?
You know, the one thing the information talks about is the idea that there are four things that a human being needs to consume in order to survive: food, air, water, and information. And government does do a pretty good job of regulating food, air, and water, but it can't really regulate information very well because of the First Amendment, which we all know, love, and respect. So I think we have to be regular, conscious, deliberate consumers of information if we want things to be, if we want a healthy and vibrant democracy. We cannot rely on government to, you know, maintain clear information, or a government-based fact-checking body probably wouldn't have too much credibility with anybody.
Clay Johnson, his new book is The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about this vital topic.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, what's coming up on New York's winter stage, reviews of new theater on Broadway and off. Stay with us.